Good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
In countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
I am so happy to be with you today. I really am. I am loving life today, and I know many of you are as well. I cannot stop smiling. I just can't. My face hurts from smiling so much. I slept but a couple of hours last night, and then not very well, purely out of excitement. Up very late, watching the very last of it, you know. After all this time, after these 20-some months, we didn't want to miss a word or any facts or figures or whatever. And like most of you, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I'm still speechless after night, that last night. The wonderful speech. Oh my God. I couldn't talk after the speech. The great thing was, I don't know how you felt about it, but I didn't see it as a celebratory speech. I didn't see it as a rah-rah, we won speech. I saw it as a frank discussion with this country of what needs to be done and how we're going to get it done and how he's going to lead us getting it done. And I was, oh, so proud of Barack Obama last night. What a sight. A million people, they say, in Chicago. It was a sea of humanity, a sea of absolutely excited, jumping up and down, flag-waving humanity. My God, what a day to be an American. What a day to be a Democrat. What a day to be a liberal. You'll get sick of hearing me say that today. I know you will. I know you will. My emotions are just, I don't know. I haven't gone up and down like this for a long, long time, and I'm absolutely spent emotionally. I remember very well when I was a child, and you hear me often relate to my childhood, my bringing up period, as a lot of people would say, my adolescence, my high school years, the formative years of my life. We're both good and bad. We all have bad things that happen and good things that happen. But during the formative years, there are certain things that stick with you. There are certain things that you see and do when you're coming of age that always stay with you. And usually they are things, on the good side of the ledger, usually they are things that help mold you and shape you into the person that you are today. And hopefully when you're young, you have enough good things happen to you and enough good examples made for you that you'll turn out all right. And I am forever grateful. I was one of these kids that was at my grandfather's side. my grandfather Guy. I, along with my very many cousins on that side of the family, loved him dearly. And I was the lucky one that lived across the road. We lived out in the country, and I lived across the road from my grandpa also. I was at his knee, fortunately, more than the other grandchildren. Always underfoot of my grandfather. And when I was but 10 years old, a very traumatic thing happened, and he moved to Florida. He moved to Kissimmee, actually a little place called Intercession City, outside of Kissimmee. And, of course, I was devastated having my grandfather gone, but we visited him very often. Thankfully, my father liked to travel, and we went back and forth to Florida, like some people go back and forth to the shopping mall these days. And so we always came through Chattanooga, Tennessee. And like I mentioned, things stick out in your life, things that you never forget. And I will never, ever forget the first time that I came through Chattanooga, Tennessee, and we stopped at Lookout Mountain. And up at Lookout Mountain, they had restrooms and drinking fountains. And this would have been 1954, 1955, with signs on them that said, white only on the restrooms, and white only on the drinking fountains. And that meant only the white people could use the restrooms, and only the white people could use that particular drinking fountain. And I remember how puzzled I was by that. So puzzled, in fact, that I had to ask my father, "Dad, what's this all about?" And he explained it to me. And as a child of that age, I think I accepted his answer with a sense of disbelief. Why would it be? And how do you explain to a kid that age that other human beings are thought of as less than you are? How do you explain to a child that age that has a puzzled look on his face? How do you explain that this man standing over here whose skin is a little darker than yours is not allowed to drink out of the same drinking fountain and not allowed to use the same restroom? I don't know how you explain that to someone, but somehow my father did. And he explained it in a way that satisfied my curiosity, but did not satisfy the feelings I had about humanity because of such actions. And it's been all these years that every time something came up with a racial nature, I was always grateful that my father had explained that to me and in the way that he did. But so many times in my life, I've been incredulous about racism and bigotry in this country. And other places as well. And so, last night, the picture of that wonderful African-American family standing on the podium at Grand Park in Chicago, Grand Park, was overwhelming. Not just for me, for millions of Americans. And it was then that I wondered, and it was then that I wished that I could trade places for a moment with somebody who's a minority. Because although my emotions were coming to the surface and boiling over, I assure you, I smiled, I cried, I wept. I can't imagine how somebody in the minority community, in the African-American community, must have felt last night. We saw the pictures of young African-American students celebrating, and we saw pictures of older African-American folks being contemplative and thinking about it and celebrating about it. But I cannot imagine what they must have felt like. And it's a great experience in my life, coming from that drinking fountain in Chattanooga all those many years ago to now. Little did I ever think when I was a child of 9 or 10 years old at that time that I would ever see or experience the great joy of having an African American be my president. And although I am not foolish enough to think that racism is all of a sudden magically gone in this country, because it is not and it will not be for a good long time, but it will be gone someday. Not 100%, but even more than it is now. It's just such a wonderful feeling to know that my country is progressing, that the people of this country are progressing and gradually getting over it. Gradually coming to the point where I was when I was 9 or 10 years old. A young lad then wondering why people felt the way they did. And unfortunately, all of my life, never understanding completely how they and why they felt the way they did. But it was a wonderful moment last night. I'm still not over it. I don't know when I'll get over it. But my heart is just bursting today with happiness for my country, for my fellow Americans, for Barack Obama and his wonderful family, for Joe Biden and his family. I am overjoyed, as I know many of you are as well. And to see Ohio be blue once again, and to see Florida be blue once again, and Indiana, the one state that I missed, and all of my predictions, I missed on Indiana and still don't know about North Carolina. And Virginia, a blue state. And Colorado, a blue state. Nevada, a blue state. I'm just absolutely, I've used the word thrilled over and over again. It's more than that, it's far more than that, but there's no words. There are no words at all. And I've heard that many people today just search and be frustrated, as I am, for the words to adequately explain how I feel today. We've been on this journey together, you and I, for a long time, and we've had our differences over it. We were for different people in the primaries, many of us. We had a wonderful primary selection, as far as I'm concerned. I always felt from day one when this whole business started that we couldn't lose in the Democratic Party this year because we had such a wonderful slate of candidates, and it came down to a ferocious fight between the forces of Hillary Clinton, of which I was one, and Barack Obama. Although never did I criticize Barack Obama, I just figured we couldn't lose. And so it came to the point where Hillary lost out, and congratulations to her, and thank you to Hillary Clinton for doing all that she did to help get Barack Obama elected. She was an important factor in it. Bill was an important factor in it. And all of you, mostly you, were important factors in changing leadership in this country. I just felt compelled to tell you that about my experiences with segregation and racism and bigotry. I know all of you probably have stories as well. And I'm just so proud that, at least to some degree, people in this country are finally getting over it. Even people who were polled and said that race mattered in the election, even many of them voted for Barack Obama. And I realize that having the attitudes they did, maybe that was difficult for them. But I also think they grew up in the process. Many people can't maybe help the way they feel about racial issues. Maybe they're bigoted and racist because they were raised that way. And it takes some time, and it takes some more life experience for them to get over it. And many of them have. And more are continuing to do so. But it's a good afternoon in America. It's a new day. Last night was a night where hope won out over fear. And last night was a night where the future was victorious over the past, and the reminder of the great possibilities available to us won out over pessimism. It's really a day where the best of what America is overcame the worst of what we can and have been in many respects. And it's a day long dreamed about by many of us. Long dreamed about. So, it's a good afternoon, America. This dream on this program started nearly 6 years ago, on December 7, 2002, when my best friend came to me and said, you know, we have to do something to balance out the media. And he and I had been deeply saddened by the Al Gore loss sometime earlier, and we were thinking about how we could fight back, and it was decided that a radio program that might help our cause, and thanks to him, the Guy James Show was born. And we had the help of several others with whom we shared a common bond, and we all knew America was a better place than what Bush tried to make us into, and we have never lost hope in the goodness and in the greatness of this land. So for nearly 6 years, we've tried to shine a spotlight into the dark, secretive world of George Bush and his people. And like thousands of other liberal activists, we kept the fires burning for change. And now, because of that effort, the change is here. And for that, I am incredibly proud. But that was yesterday. And now it's afternoon in America, and this is a new day. We hold a majority in both houses, and we have the most dynamic president-elect I have seen since Jack Kennedy took office. And I'm very sincere about that. And it is no longer enough to just rail against the Republicans, because now they're a sideline act, at least for a couple of years. And the future of our country now stands with the people on our side. And if they think that buys them a free pass from us, then they better think again. And while I can't speak for others, I promise to hold anyone in the seat of power accountable. I am a liberal. I am a progressive. And although I consider myself a party loyalist, I vow that if the Democrats don't live up to their promises, I will be twice as harsh on them as I have been on the other people. I do not care one whit about their political careers. I care about the future of my country. And we need to get a handle on so many things in this country, on our energy supplies. We need progress against this climate change problem. We've got an economy that's absolutely broken. We've got two wars gone. We've got a medical system that's beyond broken. We've got wage inequality that's rampant in this country, and we have to work to do so much work to do. And anyone who gets in the way of that work is going to be held accountable by me, and I know by you as well. And I just want to thank each and every one of you for listening as often as you do. Those on the left, smile this day. You deserve it. And those of you on the right, as much as I want to gloat about all this, I'm not going to. It is now up to you to guard America from the excesses of the majority. And to those of you who have dedicated hundreds of hours to listening to this program, I want to say thank you. You are my friends and the people I respect the most. Your knowledge and your ideas never cease to amaze me. So, good afternoon, America. It is a wonderful day. A wonderful day. I would love to have you join in on the program this afternoon. If you can, take a moment to give us a call and let us know how you feel today. Let everyone know how you feel. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Please do call and give us your thoughts. I want to hear your thoughts. I know how I feel, and it would do my little heart good to hear how you feel as well. I know we have many many ideas about how things, how we want things to go. I know I sure do. On the good side of things, I said I wasn't going to gloat today, and we cannot gloat over something that was proposed a while back. You know, in San Francisco, there was a an effort to rename the local sewage plant after President George Jr. W. Bush. And voters rejected Proposition R, which was a lighthearted attempt to memorialize the outgoing president at the Oceanside Water Pollution Control Plant. The measure's supporters say calling it the George W. Bush Sewage Plant would have been a fitting tribute to the 43rd president. They blame Bush for a long list of national woes, from the Iraq War to the slumping economy. But some critics had pointed out the name switch would have been unfair to the hardworking sewage plant. So that initiative was voted down. The White House declined comment on the measure, but other Republicans have denounced it as childish and stupid. But hey, you got to have some fun once in a while, don't you? And I was just before the program trying to find out, and it's almost impossible today. I didn't have time to dig very deep, but if anybody knows, if it has been decided yet, how Nebraska's 2nd District, that is the area right around Omaha, if you know how that turned out, let me know, because as many or most of you know, at least if you've listened to this program, Nebraska was not a winner-take-all state. There were a couple little divisions in there, and Obama could, not that it matters, but not that it matters with the, now I'm not going to gloat, with the overwhelming victory that is there, we could end up with one electoral vote out of Nebraska if that area comes in. And last I heard, it was too close to call, and they still had 9,000 provisional and early ballots to count. And that's according to the Omaha World Herald. So I'd just like to know. I'd like to know whether Barack Obama even took an electoral vote in Nebraska. Oh, joy, wouldn't that be fun? Missouri, to some people's surprise, not to mine, went red. Very, very, very close. It was the last state that they've called so far, and North Carolina still has not been called. North Carolina, extremely close. Obama having a slight lead, last I heard. So we're sitting at... what is it? 349 to 173, something like that right now, give or take a voter, electoral vote or two. We could end up with, well, we could end up with 364. Incredible. I predicted 338. I did not plan on taking Indiana. Other than that, I had it right on. And I also predicted North Carolina would go red by the slimmest of margins, so we'll see. But Indiana fooled me, and thank you for that, Hoosiers. Thank you for setting me straight on that. I couldn't be happier. Other than that, the polls were very accurate around the country, many of them. Some were a bit off, but those that called Virginia called it just right. It was a little late coming in for Obama, but it finally did come in. Ohio, didn't take long to decide. Ohio, 52 to 47, that's about the margin that a lot of people thought it would be. Just 5 points, he won by... 250,000 votes, something like that in Ohio. Obama did. Indiana won by only 20-some thousand votes, so 1 percentage point. And that was a surprise. Iowa was taken by around 9 points, pretty much on the mark. Colorado was taken by 7 points. Again, pretty much on the money. New Mexico by 5, Nevada by 12, and that was a surprise to me. A lot of people thought Nevada would be a lot closer than that. Florida, 2 points. Over about 190,000 votes. That's, you don't know how good I feel over that. It's a wonderful thing. And, well, where else? Some of the places that are not surprising. I was a bit surprised that West Virginia went as heavy for McCain that it did. Now, doggone it, Bob, you've got to do something about that. 13% went to McCain by 13%. That's more than I thought it would. North Dakota, also by far more than I thought it would, went to McCain, 8%. And Montana, only 3%. So, and of course, we have the usual in Utah and Oklahoma. And I'm so ashamed of Oklahoma. They put that moron, that idiot, James Inhofe, back into office again. And I just can't stomach him. I just can't. There are certain people in this country that you just cannot understand. What is wrong with the people? Evidently, they just don't know who they're dealing with. Is that the problem? Take Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota, for example. She was returned to office. She won by not a lot. But who, after watching her on TV make some of the statements that she has made, who would vote for that woman? Who would do it? Obviously, it has to be one of those 20 percenters that Bob's always talking about. It had to be one of these people that are just stupid or stubborn. Or it had to be somebody totally uninformed, that hasn't been keeping up with anything, doesn't know some of the outrageous things she has said and done. And one of the other ones is Mean Gene Schmidt of Cincinnati. I don't know how the people of Cincinnati could have put that woman back into office again. She is a disgrace. She's a disgrace to the Cincinnati area. I believe it's Loveland that she's from. She's a disgrace to the United States House of Representatives. She's proven it over and over again. But one does wonder, certain places around the country, how certain people sneak back into office. Now, I do want to congratulate the people over at Daytona Beach, Florida. Tom Feeney, one of the most despicable men in the House of Representatives, good old friend of Jack Abramoff, guy's been involved in much corruption. He was defeated yesterday by Suzanne Cosmas. And way to go. Absolutely way to go, Suzanne. To have Feeney out of there is just a terrific thing. Terrific thing. And as you look at that electoral map, do you realize now, and many of you have heard this, that there is not a single Republican in the House of Representatives from the New England states? Did you know that? Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York? Not a single Republican member of the House of Representatives. That's incredible. Now, you can look at Kansas and Nebraska and South Dakota and Wyoming and North Dakota and Montana all you want to, and Republicans like to do that because it's such big areas. But it's not where the people live. And when you take a look at the New England states and understand that there is not one single House of Representatives member in the New England states, not one. That's a pretty incredible thing. It really is. I was shocked to hear that this morning. Also, you've probably all realized by now that the Republicans, John McCain namely, and Sarah Palin did not pick up one state from last time. They didn't turn one blue state red. Not one. Not one. That's a great thing. And the nice thing about all of this is, and I've heard some of the pundits talking about it, and I've been thinking about it for a long time now. Barack Obama, when he takes his hand off the Bible, and he walks into the Oval Office and sits down as President of the United States, except for you and I, except for the people in the country, He owes no one. He has not relied on corporations to fund his campaign. You and I funded his campaign with our $5 and $10. He has not depended on anybody except his great organizing skills, his leadership at the top of the ticket. He owes no one. He will be accountable, to be sure, to you and to me. But it's a wonderful thing that he's not beholden to K Street or Wall Street or any other street in this country. He's just beholden to the American people. And I can't think of a president who has assumed the office in a very long time that's had the freedom now to sit in that office and do what needs to be done without having to think of special interest on the outside that put him in office or would keep him in office with more donations the next time around. So that's a wonderful thing going for him. His 52% of the vote was the highest since LBJ for the Democrat. Another great thing. And he says he's not going to put any retreads in. He's going to have new people. And he, make no mistake about it, Barack Obama is absolutely, unmistakably the head of the Democratic Party now. He's going to take Rahm Emanuel, which I think is a brilliant move, as his chief of staff. I couldn't be more pleased. Oh, I heard some of the pundits going crazy about that last night, saying, oh, no, not Rahm Emanuel. Hey, Rahm Emanuel is a master of politics. And yes, while it's true that Obama says he's going to be nonpartisan and he's going to work hard to be across the aisle, Rahm Emanuel can do that. Rahm Emanuel has done that, and he has the political expertise to reach across the aisle. He has the political expertise to deal and cajole and do what needs to be done to get things done from the office of the president. He will do that, and I am completely comfortable with having Rahm Emanuel as, I mean, to be sure, he's a terrific politico. There's no doubt about that, but to have him as chief of staff, good choice, my friend. Good choice. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Mary from Indianapolis.
Hi. Welcome to the Guy James Show.
It's I just thought I'd call and give a report here from the Hoosier State. You were just talking about us a bit, and I can't tell you how excited we Democrats are that Indiana turned blue for the first time since 1964.
It was sweet. It was sweet. I was wondering there for a while whether it was on the brink, but just knowing it was close gave me comfort all evening. And when they finally called it, it was wonderful. And you live in Marion County, in Indianapolis?
Yes, we do.
I haven't had a chance to look at the individual counties yet. I'm assuming that Marion and I know Lake went heavily for, but I'm assuming that Marion went for Barack Obama as well.
It did, and that is new. It didn't happen in 2004, and obviously not in 2000. And I have to say that, well, I started to say Senator Obama, but President-elect Obama had quite a team here in the greater Indianapolis area with volunteers and paid staff, and we knocked more doors than imaginable and made phone calls, and just there was a lot of work that went in, and he just paid a lot of attention to people who here in Indiana that hadn't been paid attention to for a very long time, and I think that showed last night when we turned Indiana blue.
Oh, not only did they turn it blue, and I know it was a slim margin, but it's a political miracle, for one thing, because it was a state that, had it not been for the 50-state strategy, that would have been ignored and given over to the Republicans once again. But for the future, I see returns from a lot of the counties weren't nearly as heavy for McCain as they were for Bush the last time. So in many of the outlying rural counties, the counties up along the Michigan border, along the Ohio border, many of them have had their red state, some of their paint chipped off of them. So I think that's the thing. We've made some wonderful strides. I'm so proud of you guys in Indiana. I'm so happy over it. I really am. It's the one state that I missed in my prediction so far. The only
well,
one.
I'm happy that we came through, and I'm sorry that you assumed, I mean, not assumed, but figured we'd go red. I'd understand why you would, but I'm happy that we delivered 11 more electoral votes for
Obama.
Oh, yeah.
I figured, I predicted 338 and we're at 349 right now. And so the difference is Indiana, and I'm oh so happy to be wrong about those 11 votes.
It's a great day.
It sure is. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome.
It's good to hear from a Hoosier.
Well, I hope to call back again sometime.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ah, there's so many stories like that around the country. Anybody listening from Virginia today? I'd like to hear from you folks as well. You've got to be feeling pretty good, too. And North Carolina. We still don't know how North Carolina has settled, but I'm feeling good about North Carolina. If they didn't make it, they damn near made it. Just lots of news out there today, and of course we'll talk about it all day. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I was just looking at my production schedule here for the show. I don't have to play campaign ads anymore. But I will play a little song here for the Republicans today. a dedication to our good friend Sarah Palin. Poor, poor, pitiful me. Ah, yes. Go back home, Sarah. And stay there. Never to be seen again. Hey, I know so many of you joined us last night. Had such a good time last night on Bob's show, the Head On Radio Network election extravaganza. It was fun. Mark was there, and John was there, and so many great callers, and Bob and myself. We had a really good time talking to all of you last night. And, of course, you know, we had this deal. We told you we were going to have a shot of Ouzo for every state that came in. It was blue. Well, that was going along okay. I haven't had a shot of any kind of liquor for many years. And I wasn't an alcoholic that quit or something. I just had a health problem, had to quit, you know, having any kind of alcohol. Anyway, I decided last night I would have one shot of Ouzo for every state to turn blue. And it was going along okay. We had just, what, one state and then two states, and then, bam, they dropped all of New England on us, and it was like, boop, 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 boop. And then, then they started coming in, and I haven't actually counted them yet, but I think it was like 26. And we did. We kept our promise. We kept our promise. 26. A shot for every state that came in. Thankfully, they got stressed out a little bit, but then, bam, it got hit again. California, Oregon, Washington, all came in all together. So, but did manage to stay good and sober. Shot glass isn't very big, you know. But we had a good time with that. And thanks to Bob and Mark and John and all the callers we had last night. That was, as we used to say back home, a real hoot. It was. It was a very good time. You know, we made predictions. I predicted 338 electoral votes. We've got 349 right now. It was off on... off in Indiana, possibly could, and I hope I'm off on North Carolina too. I hope we end up with North Carolina in our column. But the senatorial campaign, I'm a bit disappointed with that. Now, from what I hear in Georgia, we may likely end up with a runoff with Martin or Chambliss. If Chambliss doesn't end up with 50% of the vote, if I got that right, and right now he actually does have a few votes short of 50%, so they should have a runoff, and I'm not sure. Yeah, I think if they took all of Buckley's votes and added them on to Martin's, he would have beaten Chambliss, but I'm sure Buckley didn't take votes just away from Martin. He probably took some away from Chambliss as well. So we're probably stuck with that, you know what I think of him as senator. I'm disappointed, in Kentucky. I thought Mitch McConnell had a shot of getting knocked out, and he won by some 105,000 votes. He won by 6 points, I think it was, in Kentucky. So that's with everybody reporting 100%, and so it's 53-47 in Kentucky. That was one we thought possibly we had a shot at. Lizzie Dole, bye-bye, baby. Bye-bye. Hagan knocked her socks off, 53-44 to an incumbent senator, two-term senator, Elizabeth Dole. I think her rotten campaigning came back to bite her right square in the ass, and I couldn't be happier about that. So congratulations to Hagan. In Virginia, Warner, as expected, a rout over Gilmore. That was a good thing. Rockefeller, of course, another route in West Virginia. There wasn't any doubt about that. Alabama, a lot of folks didn't give us any chance at all in that, and basically there wasn't. Former Democrat, now Republican Sessions, he won that easily. I don't know why in Mississippi anybody ever thought, and there was talk of this, of possibly defeating Cochran. He won handily over Fleming in that state. Mary Landrieu hung on by about 120,000 votes. She won 52-46. As you well know, there was a lot of concern about her possibly losing because a lot of her base moved out of New Orleans after Katrina. Didn't happen. She hung on to that. In Arkansas, Pryor was uncontested. Imagine that, running uncontested in this country in this day and age. The Udall cousins, victorious in, by wide margins in Colorado and New Mexico. Very good to have them. Of course, we didn't win in Max Baucus won in Montana. I'm trying to think if there are any other cases. And Carl Levin, of course, repeated in Michigan and Harkin in Iowa. But really, in some of the states, I'm disappointed. How does a fool like James Inhofe? Somebody, can you explain that to me, Lucy? I don't get it. I do not understand how the hell a caveman, knuckle-dragging moron like Senator James Inhofe ends up getting reelected again. I don't get it. Somebody tell me. And Smith and Merkley out in Oregon virtually got a dead heat going, although Smith is around, 11,000 votes ahead. And that's still with just 72% reporting. And Alaska, believe it or not, with 99% reporting, Ted Stevens is... 3,500 votes up on Begich, mayor of Anchorage. How can it be that you are a convicted felon and you end up with half the vote amongst your constituency? People that you stole from, people that you took advantage of, people that you raised your hand and swore that you would do your duty and be honest and forthright to those people. You screwed them. You screwed them good. You lied, cheated, and stole, and did everything a senator should not do, and yet you get reelected. Does that say more about him? I would say it says more about the people of Alaska. It says far more about the people of Alaska, the general populace, at least half of them in Alaska, than it does about Ted Stevens. He's a no-good thief. We know that. And I happen to think their congressman up there, Young, is as well. So, I'm not surprised about him. I'm not surprised about Young. But half the people in Alaska voted for this clown? You tell me, Sarah, baby, what does that say about the great state of Alaska up north? And it's not like these people... they're exactly right. Powerpuff is exactly right, and Lillo... on the chat room, they're exactly right. It's not as though his constituents are saying, oh, gee, he got a raw deal. Oh, gee, he really didn't do this. They know damn well he did it. And many that I've seen interviewed have admitted, yes, he did it, but so what? Well, I don't know. Like I said, it doesn't say much for Alaska. You don't go out and vote for a damn thug. You don't go out and vote for a convicted felon. You just don't do it under any circumstances whatsoever. Please. So he will get thrown out of the Senate, and Sarah will get to appoint another senator. I can understand her playing politics. I can understand the party up there playing. I just can't understand the people. That's what I don't understand. Let's take a run on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin.
Hi, you're Kevin.
Tired of hearing my voice.
Hey, can you still talk today?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I tell you, it's a great day up here.
Yeah.
It really is. It's just like a glow. At least that's the way I see it.
Isn't it, though? Everybody's got a little extra kick in their step today. It's wonderful. It really is.
Yeah. On the business of Ted Stevens, did he win or lose?
He is at the moment up by 3,500 votes with 99% reporting, so he's a virtual lock.
Okay. You know, we need to make it... put back, amend the Constitution. Yes, you can secede from the Union.
Yeah, okay. I'll go. I'm with you.
Yeah, you know, okay, you want to secede, you may go. You may go.
I think they, with that AIP party up there and all, they just might do it if they had the chance.
You know, I say we need to call them on their bluff, because all these people who talk about seceding from the union, they don't want to secede. It's just to rile up, you know. And they're the ones who get more federal welfare than anything.
Oh, to be sure. To be sure they do. It is more of a socialist place than... And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not saying it's bad that they're all sharing in the wealth up there. But they had a lot of nerve. The Republicans up there had a hell of a lot of nerve complaining about socialists when they're living off the tit of the oil company.
Oh, yeah. And federal dollars.
You bet.
And federal dollars.
They certainly are.
But I really wish... I hope they do... Succeed. Because you know what? When you start having whale blubber for a diet, then, you know.
Yeah.
Or seal barb or whatever it is, and wolf meat. That's all you can eat.
You can draw a wolf meat shot from an airplane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope the good people in Alaska don't think we're being too hard on them. It's just the oddballs that voted for Stevens that got me wondering.
Well, but that's half the state.
Yeah, it is. It is half the state.
It's half the state. So, you know, it's like something is in the water up there that's strange. You know. But, yeah.
So, did you party long into the night last night?
I was up until, like, 2, because I really wanted to find out Al Franken and Ted Stevens.
Yeah. And here we are. I think we do know about Stevens now for sure, but we still don't know about Franken. That one's
still... Yeah, I was kind of rooting for Franken because of my experience in Minnesota. You know?
About 450 votes.
Yeah.
Out of 3 million, 450 votes. That's amazing.
Well, you know there's something up there.
And Barkley, you know, the independent there, he peeled off about 437,000 votes. So I'm told it's probably an equal number that he peeled away from Coleman and Franken. So Franken is going to ask for a recount, which I think it automatically goes into effect. It's less than 1%, so he'll go for it.
Okay. Yeah, but it's still a great day. How many we have all together?
I think we're sitting on 349 right now, with a good
possibility. Well, I'm talking about the Senate.
Oh, the Senate. I think we're sitting on 56 right now.
And you figure with Levin, from Vermont, Sanders.
Yeah, Sanders and Joe.
Ah, forget Joe.
So
even though Joe, I think is going to do it to kiss to suck up.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping there again. Somebody like Obama's got more sense than I do, but I just I couldn't stomach having him caucus with us anymore. If I were Harry Reid, I believe I would definitely ask him to leave. That we didn't want to see his face in our caucus anymore.
No, what's going to happen is that you know Joe's going to become all of a sudden a liberal. And you know, he's because that's what he does. You know, he bends with every wind.
Well, he does, in fact.
Because in the 90s, you know, he wasn't such a bad guy.
No, he just started getting crazy. I wasn't happy with him. I wasn't happy when he was a vice presidential candidate. I can tell you that. I was not. But I don't know. I am told, and thank you, John, for sending us in. I didn't know this. I'm told that they're going to do a recount in Missouri. Missouri was pretty doggone close, only 6,000 votes out of about 300,000, or out of about out of about 3 million, and that's with 100% counting. So who knows what could happen there? I guess they got to take anything for granted. If they figure it's close and they want a recount, they should take it, no matter what the margin is. You know they would. The other side would.
You know, I was getting calls from my relatives in Jamaica, Canada, Britain, and they're like, you know, finally you came to your senses.
Oh, I'm just thrilled for the American people today. Our prestige around the world has went up immeasurably in the last 24 hours. It certainly has. It's so good to see the rest of the world looking upon us like, oh my God, yeah, you guys have come to your senses. Welcome back to reality. And I am extremely thrilled over that. I really am.
Like I said, it's just a strain. It's like the past eight years is just like, I don't know. Thank God it's over.
Well, it's just a bad, nasty dream. I don't know how, I should look here and see. I see the stock market rewarded the Obama victory by going down 475 points today.
Well, they want their capital gains tax.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny to watch the last few days, Financial Channel, because they were all putting their 2 cents worth in against Obama. Well, we can't have a Democrat in, you know. Of course, that's nothing we didn't expect. But, yeah, 475 points off at this point of the day. So, not the news of Obama coming in on Wall Street, not welcomed with open arms. But do I give a damn? No.
No. Well, you know what? In 6 months, in 8 months, a lot of people are going to be scrambling for new jobs anyway. You should. It's like yesterday I actually sat down and watched the Fox Channel just to see. They all had a nice shade of gray on their faces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Death cometh over.
Yes, yes, yes. That was indeed pleasing. Britt Hume last night, he looked like he...
great.
Oh, yes. They looked really rough. And they tried to...
This morning.
Bill Kristol and all of them, they were putting their spin on it, and it was great. I was just thinking, wallow in it, boys, wallow in it. I'm loving it.
And so is Bush. You saw Bush this morning?
Ooh, yeah. Maybe. Yes,
he
did.
Like he went on a bender last night.
Well, he might have. It was Laura's birthday yesterday, so they stayed home. He probably had a nip or two. I know he didn't get any.
More than that.
He didn't get any of my ouzo, that's for sure. Hey, got to run. We got news coming up at the top of the hour. Good to hear from you, my friend. Enjoy.
Most definitely will.
I'm enjoying. I know you are as well.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Ah, yes. Kevin was with us last night on our extravaganza we had here. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Good to hear from people all over the country. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to give us a call, we're going to pause for news coming up right now. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. We'll be back right after the news.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America.
It was a momentous, historic moment of hope and of redemption as millions of workers nationwide heard the news that Barack Obama is our president-elect. Karen Ackerman is political director of the AFL-CIO, which fielded an army of hundreds of thousands of workers to get out the vote for Obama.
It's a very, very poignant moment. This moment is so important for the history of this country and for working people in this country. It means that there is hope and there's a chance to really rebuild the middle class.
Obama told his supporters in Chicago that tomorrow brings huge challenges that will be met with the resolve to change America.
The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there.
Ackerman says real change has to happen now, including immediate economic help for working people and labor law reform.
Those measures in and of themselves will ensure a different path for this country and a rebuilding of the middle class.
MSNBC's exit polls showed 6 out of 10 voters concerned about the economy. Multiple announcements of mass layoffs across the country on Tuesday probably didn't help calm those concerns. Jesse Russell reports.
Election Day exit polls said the economy was the most pressing issue on the minds of voters. And that message was likely reinforced as a number of companies announced plans to make mass layoffs on Monday and Tuesday. Allegheny Technologies announced plans to lay off 20% of its workforce. A downturn in the stainless steel market has forced the company to cut 700 jobs. Oregon-based Tektronix announced it would be cutting 150 employees in an attempt to stay competitive. The shutdown of Chrysler plants is beginning to have a ripple effect. Lear Corporation announced it would close a Newark factory and let go of 136 employees on the heels of Chrysler closing its Newark plant on December 31st. The Lear plant makes seats for Chrysler Aspen and Dodge Durangos. Nokia said on Tuesday that in light of the weakening world economy, it would need to slash 600 employees. Circuit City has finally realized rumors that the chain would be closing stores in order to avoid bankruptcy. 155 stores will be shuttered, and 17% of the company's workforce will be let go. IBM let go of 100 workers on Tuesday at an Essex, Vermont plant. And finally, a bottling plant in Park Hills, Missouri, announced plans on Monday to lay off 40% of its workforce.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you give me! Give my creation!
This is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. An absolutely elated, delighted, ecstatic Guy James with you today. Oh, yes, indeed. It's a wonderful day in the neighborhood, no doubt about it. I was just looking, surfing around a little bit during the news, and I happened to see a picture of the White House and their carpenters out on Pennsylvania Avenue. And you know what they're doing? They're building the review stand. Yes, for January 20th, they're building the review stand. And guess who's going to be sitting in the main chair? President-elect Barack Hussein Obama. By then, he will be President Obama. Today, he's president-elect, but when he sits down in that review stand, he will, in fact, have been sworn in and be the President of the United States. Ain't it sweet? It is indeed. Higher percentage votes for Obama than any first-term president since FDR in 1932. You talk about a political machine that they had out on the street. It was spectacular. Their performance was, I think it's been unmatched as a political machine. There isn't any question about it. Nationwide effort that they put forth, it was fabulous. Could somebody tell me, what was it with Tom DeLay and Ken Blackwell on MSNBC last night? I mean, what are they doing with Tom DeLay on? I mean, he's disgraced, he's a bum, he's a no good. You know, you talk about a relationship with Jack Abramoff, who had a better relationship with him than Tom DeLay. I don't understand what the deal is with Tom DeLay and MSNBC. Tweety Matthews must get him in there for some reason. I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I'm disappointed we didn't make it. I predicted we'd end up with 263 in the House, and it appears I'm going to be a few short on that. And we're not going to make it to 60 in the Senate. I got an email and also saw in the chat room people not happy with Rahm Emanuel. Listen, people complain about having wimpy leaders in the Congress, in the House of Representatives. People not happy with how strong Nancy Pelosi's been. People have not been happy with the performance of Harry Reid in the Senate. Not strong enough. You don't want a political novice as chief of staff in the White House. You don't want somebody learning on that job. You want somebody that's ham-fisted, knows how to give and take, and Rahm Emanuel is your guy. Hey, look, Rahm Emanuel is not a guy I particularly like. And I think maybe to be chief of staff, you might need to be a guy that people don't particularly like, his personality, but he's forceful and all that. But he knows how to get the job done. I certainly don't approve of everything Rahm Emanuel's done, but he's the type of guy you need as chief of staff. And I think, Rahm says we need a novice. So if you have a novice chief of staff in the White House, you're going down the tubes and you're going down fast, real fast. That is one place you do not want a novice. 866-546-5254. I heard many of you say that you didn't get to hear all of the speech last night for one reason or another. And I've had several requests, so let's do it. It's going to take a while, but I think it's one of the greatest speeches I've ever heard. And again, it wasn't a rah-rah speech. It wasn't a whoopee, we won speech. This was a speech, a heartfelt speech to every citizen of America, to every voter in America, to everyone who would listen to reason and listen to Barack Obama. I thought this speech was amazing. It was delivered well. It was written even better. Barack Obama, President-elect of the United States of America.
Hello, Chicago! If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer. It's the answer told by lines that stretched around schools and churches in numbers this nation has never seen. By people who waited 3 hours and 4 hours, many for the first time in their lives, because they believed that this time must be different, that their voices could be that difference. It's the answer spoken by young and old, rich and poor, Democrat and Republican, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, disabled and not disabled, Americans who sent a message to the world that we have never been just a collection of individuals or a collection of red states and blue states. We are and always will be the United States of America. It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful about what we can achieve, to put their hands on the arc of history and bend it once more toward the hope of a better day. It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America. A little bit earlier this evening, I received an extraordinarily gracious call from Senator McCain. Senator McCain fought long and hard in this campaign, and he's fought even longer and harder for the country that he loves. He has endured sacrifices for America that most of us cannot begin to imagine. We are better off for the service rendered by this brave and selfless leader. I congratulate him. I congratulate Governor Palin for all that they've achieved. And I look forward to working with them to renew this nation's promise in the months ahead. I want to thank my partner in this journey, a man who campaigned from his heart and spoke for the men and women he grew up with on the streets of Scranton and rode with on the train home to Delaware, the Vice President-elect of the United States, Joe Biden. And I would not be standing here tonight without the unyielding support of my best friend for the last 16 years, the rock of our family, the love of my life, the nation's next First Lady, Michelle Obama. Sasha and Malia, I love you both more than you can imagine, and you have earned the new puppy that's coming with us to the White House. And while she's no longer with us, I know my grandmother's watching, along with the family that made me who I am. I miss them tonight. I know that my debt to them is beyond measure. To my sister Maya, my sister Alma, all my other brothers and sisters, thank you so much for all the support that you've given me. I'm grateful to them. To my campaign manager, David Plouffe. The unsung hero of this campaign, who built the best political campaign, I think, in the history of the United States of America. To my chief strategist, David Axelrod. has been a partner with me every step of the way. To the best campaign team ever assembled in the history of politics, you made this happen, and I am forever grateful for what you've sacrificed to get it done. But above all, I will never forget who this victory truly belongs to. It belongs to you. It belongs to you. I was never the likeliest candidate for this office. We didn't start with much money or many endorsements. Our campaign was not hatched in the halls of Washington. It began in the backyards of Des Moines, in the living rooms of Concord, and the front porches of Charleston. It was built by working men and women who dug into what little savings they had to give $5 and $10 and $20 to the cause. It grew strength from the young people who rejected the myth of their generation's apathy, who left their homes and their families for jobs that offered little pay and less sleep. It drew strength from the not-so-young people who braved the bitter cold and scorching heat to knock on doors of perfect strangers, and from the millions of Americans who volunteered and organized and proved that more than two centuries later, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people has not perished from the earth. This is your victory. Now, I know you didn't do this just to win an election. I know you didn't do it for me. You did it because you understand the enormity of the task that lies ahead. For even as we celebrate tonight, we know the challenges that tomorrow will bring are the greatest of our lifetime. Two wars, a planet in peril, the worst financial crisis in a century. Even as we stand here tonight, we know there are brave Americans waking up in the deserts of Iraq and the mountains of Afghanistan to risk their lives for us. There are mothers and fathers who will lie awake after their children fall asleep and wonder how they'll make the mortgage, or pay their doctor's bills, or save enough for their child's college education. There's new energy to harness, new jobs to be created, new schools to build, and threats to meet, alliances to repair. The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there. And false starts. There are many who won't agree with every decision or policy I make as president. And we know the government can't solve every problem. But I will always be honest with you about the challenges we face. I will listen to you, especially when we disagree. And above all, I will ask you to join in the work of remaking this nation the only way it's been done in America for 221 years. Block by block, brick by brick, calloused hand by calloused hand. What began 21 months ago in the depths of winter cannot end on this autumn night. This victory alone is not the change we seek. It is only the chance for us to make that change. And that cannot happen if we go back to the way things were. It can't happen without you, without a new spirit of service, a new spirit of sacrifice. So let us summon a new spirit of patriotism, of responsibility, where each of us resolves to pitch in and work harder and look after not only ourselves but each other. Let us remember that if this financial crisis taught us anything, it's that we cannot have a thriving Wall Street while Main Street suffers. In this country, we rise or fall as one nation, as one people. Let's resist the temptation to fall back on the same partisanship and pettiness and immaturity that has poisoned our politics for so long. Let's remember that it was a man from this state who first carried the banner of the Republican Party to the White House, a party founded on the values of self-reliance and individual liberty and national unity. Those are values that we all share. And while the Democratic Party has won a great victory tonight, we do so with a measure of humility and determination to heal the divides that have held back our progress. As Lincoln said to a nation far more divided than ours, we are not enemies, but friends. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. And to those Americans whose support I have yet to earn, I may not have won your vote tonight, but I hear your voices. I need your help, and I will be your president too. And all those watching tonight from beyond our shores, from parliaments and palaces, to those who are huddled around radios in the forgotten corners of the world, our stories are singular, but our destiny is shared. And a new dawn of American leadership is at hand. To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you. To those who seek peace and security, we support you. And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we proved once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope. That's the true genius of America, that America can change. Our union can be perfected. What we've already achieved gives us hope for what we can and must achieve tomorrow. This election had many firsts and many stories that will be told for generations, but one that's on my mind tonight is about a woman who cast her ballot in Atlanta. She is a lot like the millions of others who stood in line to make their voice heard in this election, except for one thing. Ann Nixon Cooper is 106 years old. She was born just a generation past slavery, a time when there were no cars on the road or planes in the sky, when someone like her couldn't vote for two reasons, because she was a woman and because of the color of her skin. And tonight, I think about all that she's seen throughout her century in America. The heartache and the hope. The struggle and the progress. The times we were told that we can't. And the people who pressed on with that American creed, yes, we can. At a time when women's voices were silenced and their hopes dismissed, she lived to see them stand up and speak out and reach for the ballot. Yes, we can. When there was despair in the Dust Bowl and depression across the land, she saw a nation conquer fear itself with a new deal, new jobs, a new sense of common purpose. Yes, we can. When the bombs fell on our harbor and tyranny threatened the world, she was there to witness a generation rise to greatness and a democracy was saved. Yes, we can. She was there for the buses in Montgomery, the hoses in Birmingham, a bridge in Selma, and a preacher from Atlanta who told the people that we shall overcome. Yes, we can. A man touched down on the moon. A wall came down in Berlin. A world was connected by our own science and imagination. And this year, in this election, she touched her finger to a screen and cast her vote. Because after 106 years in America, through the best of times and the darkest of hours, she knows how America can change. Yes, we can. America, we have come so far. We have seen so much. But there's so much more to do. So tonight, let us ask ourselves, if our children should live to see the next century, if my daughters should be so lucky to live as long as Ann Nixon Cooper, what change will they see? What progress will we have made? This is our chance to answer that call. This is our moment. This is our time to put our people back to work and open doors of opportunity for our kids, to restore prosperity and promote the cause of peace, to reclaim the American dream and reaffirm that fundamental truth that out of many we are one, that while we breathe, we hope. And where we are met with cynicism and doubt and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
Welcome back, everybody. I know a bit lengthy for a radio program to listen to the speech again, but one cannot hear those words too many times. we all should memorize that speech. The Republicans should memorize that speech. You want to know what kind of Neanderthals are really out there? And I just made a smart-ass answer to a email. I replied to all, quite a few people. But it didn't take them long, and I didn't think it would take them long. Got an email. It's called Yes, We Can. Yes, we can with our supermajorities. We can push our agenda as we've always tried to do. Number one, more abortions. Yes, we can. Ban handguns. Yes, we can. Redistribute the wealth through more taxes. Yes, we can. What do you want to bet whoever wrote this and whoever's sending this around wouldn't have another dime's worth of more taxes? But that's, you know, that's how that goes. Number four, normalize relations with Cuba. Yes, we can. Withdraw our troops from Iraq. Yes, we can. Impose onerous regulations on businesses to save the environment. Yes, we can. Repeal NAFTA. Yes, we can. Double the minimum wage. Yes, we can. Ban Christianity. You knew that one was coming. Yes, we can. Repeal the Patriot Act. Yes, we can. Open the immigration floodgates. Yes, we can. Open voting to all immigrants. Yes, we can. Repeal welfare reform. Yes, we can. And single-payer health reform. Yes, we can. And this is just for the first 100 days. Well, I hope you're ready, because you're going to be getting a lot of this from now on. You're going to be getting a lot of this for the next 4 years, no doubt. The rabid dog, mad dog, foaming at the mouth right is ready. If anybody thinks that this humiliating defeat that they suffered last night will make them lay down and behave themselves and act like normal people, you're wrong. It will not. It will make some of them even angrier and even more bitter. And they've controlled the government for the past 8 years, and they're bitter. Imagine how bitter they're going to be with somebody else controlling the government for a while. So, take heart in as much as that these people are in the minority. I am at least glad of that. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I'm just reading some comments off the chat room. Not sure I agree with that. People are agreeing with most of that. I don't agree with most of that. I don't agree with hardly any of that. 866-546-5254. I'd love to have you join the program today. I'd love to hear what you have to say about your experiences on Election Day. We're hearing from Ohio, and I'm not going to vouch for this. I'm just telling you I'm hearing from a source in Ohio, and I do not know. I will not represent this as being the gospel. I'm going to say up front, this is a rumor from Ohio, from Toledo. I'm an Obama inside observer in Toledo. Rumor has it, heard from other observers, that Joe the plumber attempted to cast a ballot in the wrong precinct. Rumor also has it that he was stopped by a City of Toledo police officer in the last few days for speeding, but Joe the plumber insisted to the officer contacting the officer's supervisor to let him know who he was giving a ticket to. And there's an update on this. The Toledo Blade and the Toledo Police Department have confirmed the speeding part of this. Also, Joe the plumber is starting, not that there's anything wrong with getting caught with a speeding ticket, that's not the point here. He insisted to the officer that he'd better let his supervisor know who he was giving this ticket to. Joe the plumber is starting a couple of websites, reportedly to make money, raise money for those less fortunate than himself, and he says he will only take, quote, a little, end quote, of the money for himself. Well, isn't that nice? Good to know that he's such a good citizen. I love good quotes. And, of course, as you know, the fountain of good quotes of all time, I think, was Winston Churchill. If he didn't make the quotes, he at least had many attributed to him. Seems like every time I hear a really good quote, they say it was by Winston Churchill. But supposedly, and I didn't hear him say this, so I can't vouch for it. Somebody else said they heard him say it. Churchill said the difference between war and politics is in politics, you can get killed more than once. Well, Richard Nixon came back. George Bush came back. A lot of politicians have come back. Can Sarah Palin do it? I hope not. I do want to reiterate what I said yesterday. If I never, ever, ever see that woman again, it'll be far too soon. She is headed back to up there in Alaska as we speak, I think. Long flight. And I hope she makes it back safe and sound. And I hope she gets into her home in Wasilla and back to her office in Anchorage and once in a while down to Juneau, where she's really supposed to have an office. And we never hear or hear of or see her again. That would be a good thing. Looking at our notes here. There is, in the new Newsweek magazine, they are starting off a series called How He Did It. And it is a 7-week series in Newsweek magazine about how Obama got involved in a presidential campaign, the secret battles and private fears behind an epic election. And a lot of people within his campaign and within his circle of friends were interviewed for this, and the stipulation was that Newsweek could not print any of it until after the election was over. And I have read the first installment of it, and I'm telling you, it is not to be missed. I don't hawk magazines on the show, but this first installment of this 7-week installment of this is absolutely not to be missed. It is riveting. You will love it, I promise you. Looking around at updates, I wanted to see if there was an update here on Alaska. Let me check here. I've had several inquiries. Do we know about Alaska yet? In the Senate, Stevens. Let's look it up here. Alaska has still not been called. Stevens is up by, well, he's up by 3,500 votes. And that's with 99% reporting. So if that's true, if there are 99% in, that would make it mathematically impossible for Begich to overcome that lead of Stevens. But here is the game. Stevens will get tossed out of the Senate. I think we can be assured of that. He will get thrown out. And then Sarah. Make a way for Sarah. Sarah will get to appoint another senator. That'll be another Republican. Or possibly resign as governor and have the new lieutenant governor appoint her. If she resigns, the lieutenant governor, whatever they call the second in command in Alaska, will be a Republican, most certainly, and they will have made a deal, and the new lieutenant governor will appoint her as the Senate. Do you think she will go that far? Do you think her political ambitions are that strong that she would do that? I do. I do believe it. I have no doubts that there's probably something like that in the works right now. So we shall see. Will it be Sarah? Because let's face it, she took to campaigning and the political scene here in the lower 48 like a duck to water. There isn't any question nobody enjoyed the limelight any more than Sarah did. So we may see her in Washington, D.C. in the not-too-distant future. We'll see. It depends on what happens with this Stevens appeal. That could take as long as 18 months, I'm told. I hope it does not. And to be fair here, I don't want to... I certainly don't want to be unfair. I've criticized the people of Alaska for putting Stevens back in. But I also know that, what's his name, Jefferson in New Orleans, I think, help me out here if I'm wrong on this. I'm thinking that in New Orleans, that Jefferson is put back in, and we all know that he's a crook and a thief, so correct me if I'm wrong on that, anybody. I'm kind of going in uncharted waters there, but I believe I read where he was reelected, that Jefferson was. And, of course, he's still waiting an indictment or some sort of legal remedy to his situation. I don't know. I'm not crazy about that. Not crazy about felons being in the helping run my government. Not at all. 866-546-5254. Love to have you join the program. We're going to come back in just a moment or two. Can't figure out why we played that song. That's because that was the Franklin Roosevelt song, Happy Days Are Here Again, when Franklin Roosevelt got reelected, because people were happy he got elected. And so there was a little song written, Happy Days Are Here Again, and that's why I'm playing that. That's a traditional Democrat song. Democratic Party song, Happy Days Are Here Again. I've heard that played at many a convention and so forth, so there you have it. That's why we had that on, for those, for you youngins. Yes. Hey, we've got somebody on the phone right now that wants to explain something to me. I ask, you know, it's great having this power. I ask for an explanation, and boom, somebody calls in with the information. I mean, how can you get it any better than that? Hey, we've got Ray with us. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Guy. Good to be here.
I understand that you have information about William Jefferson for us that I didn't have.
Right. I was watching looking at the charts from MSNBC, and I noticed that the 2nd District didn't have any reporting. I did Google Jefferson, and he's still in Congress, so apparently he won in the primary, got a majority of the votes, and didn't have to go for the runoff. And so he's still in.
Now, why do you suppose, and then if he won in the primary, then he'd be unopposed in the general.
Right.
Why do you suppose nobody would have run against him?
I have no idea.
When you've got an opponent that's got both feet stuck in the buckets of crap, it usually is someone you can go after. I kind of wonder. That does make me curious.
Yeah, we also lost our Democratic congressman from Baton Rouge, who was he was just elected about 6 months ago after Richard God was purging New Orleans Baker, who is now doing something, with private industry, making a fortune, I guess, as a lobbyist. But he retired, and Don Cazio stepped in, won the election, and then lost the regular election. So he kind of filled in, for about 6 months and got killed.
Yeah, I was looking for a list I had here. I had a list here someplace about who, how many seats we won and how many we lost and so forth around the country. But, can't win them all, right?
Yeah.
And I guess we wouldn't want to have them all. We wouldn't want the Democrats having...
We have nobody to blame.
That's right. That's right. How do you feel today?
I feel good. I didn't vote yesterday. I voted 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And got it over with.
Yeah.
But I still had to hear all those, campaign ads and everything in the meantime.
I know. I did the same thing. I voted last week, I guess it was. And it was good to have it out of the way, although from what I hear, the conversation in line yesterday were rather lively in some quarters from what I've heard. So I live in a deep, you do as well,
mm-hmm.
hardcore red area, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is here. I think it went, I think Collier County went about 64% red in Lee County. Actually, I think Obama in Lee County, Florida, which is Fort Myers, I believe I read where he did better than anybody has done here in like 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
He still got beat by like 11% here in Lee County. It's not as heavily red as Collier County, but I heard, I think that's the number, that he did better than any Democratic candidate in like 40 years. So,
right. Well, here in Louisiana, we had... Obama carried Orleans Parish, but not Jefferson. Also East Baton Rouge Parish, where I live, and Caddo, which is up to Shreveport, which is another large city. So it's basically the big cities
mm-hmm.
Here in Louisiana were the only ones that went blue.
Can you imagine Louisiana ever going blue?
I can only hope.
You're a long ways away from it.
But you know, Louisiana is kind of like Florida. Florida is a northern state.
Yes, it is.
All the snowbirds.
People do forget that. Florida is not part of the South. Now, up in the Panhandle, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's very southern up in there. In fact, it's it may as well be part of Alabama and
or Georgia.
And Georgia, up in the Panhandle, it's as southern as you can get. But yeah, from, say, Tampa on down, there's nothing southern about Florida other than the geographic location.
Well, I was thinking from Orlando on down.
Yeah, Tampa across the I-4 corridor and down that way.
The I-4 goes north-south more than east-west.
Yeah, it kind of does. It kind of does. You can just...
I used to live in Orlando or in Altamont Springs.
Oh,
in Old County.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Spent a lot of hours on I-4.
That corridor yesterday went blue. And that's what carried Florida. So
mm-hmm.
that was a decidedly good thing. I feel good about Florida going blue this time around. Very, very
yeah.
good. I haven't had the pleasure since I've lived here some 11 years or so. So it got better. Well, thanks, Ray. Thanks for calling and letting us know about that. I was curious. I didn't have a chance to check on everything today. And so William Jefferson is still there. sooner or later that whole situation is going to be resolved. And
I hope so. I
think we know how it's going to be resolved, but he's going to hang on. They usually hang on till the very end.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Ray. Good to hear from you.
Sure, guy. Okay, bye.
Ah, yes. I've been to Baton Rouge. I love Baton Rouge. You talk about South. Been down on the LSU campus, the moss hanging on the trees, and something beautiful about Baton Rouge. That's the first place that I ever saw. Down by the Capitol building in Baton Rouge, they've got a big statue of Huey Long in there. Anyway, down by the statue, they have a big old convention center, hotel and convention center, practically right across the street from the state capitol in Baton Rouge. And my beloved Ohio State Buckeyes played LSU there well back in the 80s, and I drove down for the game and, make a long story short, ended up being a colonel of the state of Louisiana. I was personally appointed by the great and beloved Governor Edwin Edwards. Try that on for size. And down on the corner, a block or two away, as I recall, there was like a Woolworths or a Kresge's or one of those old-style dime stores. You remember that had the lunch counters in and the soda fountain and all? And where I'm from in Ohio, we had plenty of those kinds of stores, but they had like meatloaf and chicken and Swiss steak and mashed potatoes and corn and so forth on. And I was never ever so pleasantly surprised as when I got to Baton Rouge. I went down there to that lunch counter and they had Cajun food in this place. And it was one of those dime store lunch counters, and I had me a good old plate of red beans and rice. I'll never forget that. That's the first Cajun food I ever ate, and I've come to love. In fact, just day before yesterday, I made a big old pot of red beans and rice. I do love the stuff, and I have a great recipe. If you want sometime, email me, and I'll share it with you. Makes me hungry thinking about it. I do love red beans and rice. And it's a funny thing. And I'll just tell the story. We don't have a whole lot left in time on the show today. I have probably discussed my weird eating habits. I eat no fish nor fowl of any kind, no seafood, no fowl. It's not because of any allergies or anything like that. I just don't like it. And I don't even like to sit at the same table with most seafood. Anyway, I'm down to the LSU football game, and they don't tailgate like the rest of us tailgate up north. They do it with a black pot instead of a barbecue grill. And so I'm in park with these old boys, and they got their black pot out, and I'd been made a colonel the night before, and here I am parked in my scarlet and gray van, Ohio State van, right up next to the stadium, and which had them fairly perplexed. And I noticed that they're cooking over there, and it's an evil-looking brew, black, and they've got a boat paddle in there stirring things around, and there was duck and mud bugs, and I don't know what all in that thing. Chicken, it is a vile-looking mess for a person like me, so picky about eating. And then the last thing they put in was the rice, and I guess this is some sort of jambalaya or gumbo or something. And by then I was like the guest of honor at this thing. It was all these LSU fans and me. And they grab a plate and dish out a big old heaping pile of this stuff on the plate. And I don't eat this stuff. I don't eat any things like mud bugs and all that stuff. I don't eat it. Duck and whatever they had in that. And so what are you going to do? You're like expected to eat this stuff. And so I got the bottle of hot sauce. They always got plenty of hot sauce around, big economy-sized jars and bottles of it, and just loaded this stuff with hot sauce and sat there and ate it. And that's my story about Baton Rouge. Later on that night, went down to some place out in the sticks and watched them eat mud bugs like there was no tomorrow. Never saw anything quite like it. They had a shovel in this old pot, throwing them up on a big old board and a half a dozen bottles of hot sauce, and they were eating those things as fast as they could cook them. I guess maybe I've told that story before, but I'll never forget it. That's for sure. If you want to go to a college football game, one of the greatest places in this country, and I've been just about to all of the really great places to play college football. If you want to go to one of the best, if certainly in the top handful, and maybe the best atmosphere for a college football game, you just go down to Baton Rouge sometime to LSU. Those people are crazy. They get all dressed up in their yellow and their purple, and they got the, as they do throughout the Southeastern Conference, they have these damn pom-poms, and they stand up the entire game and don't sit down and don't shut up. And when your bus comes in with your football players on it, they have a big corridor that you have to drive through, and they got a big old tiger at the end of this thing, a real tiger in a cage, and they're chanting these thousands of people as they welcome you to their stadium. They're chanting tiger bait, and when your kids get off the football bus, their eyes are big around the saucers looking at this mess, but it's quite a place. It's quite a place, and if you ever get a chance to go to a football game at Baton Rouge, I highly recommend it because you're not going to get a better college football atmosphere than that. And that's coming from a Buckeye fan place, folks. Somebody that thinks the horseshoe's just about it in Columbus when it gets for football. But I don't know. I don't know if anything... Ray tells me it was a Walgreens on 3rd Street near North Street, and I think he's exactly right. I think he's right. So that's my experience in Baton Rouge. I like it. 866, well, I guess I'm not going to give out the phone number. We don't have time to take another call without cutting somebody off. Listen, I really enjoyed yesterday and the lead up to the election, and you know, we're probably going to shift gears now. We've played the game. We won. Now it's time to get down to business. And I wasn't kidding about keeping our Democrats, our liberals, keeping their feet to the fire. We're going to do it. I vow to you that I will do it. I'm counting on you to do it. They've made a lot of promises. It's up to us to see that they keep them. It's up to us to put the pressure on and make sure that they know that, just like John says, now is when the real work begins. The election was easy compared to what we have to do now. Now we have to govern. And now we have to really get down to business. And I am confident that we will. And I am confident that Barack Obama is the right man for the job, or I never would have supported him at all. So I'm feeling good today. And I know a lot of you are as well. It's not just winning a contest. This is our lives that are impacted by all this. And we need them to do the right thing. Thanks so much for joining us here today on the Guy James Show. I certainly appreciate hearing from you every single day. Thanks for joining us. We're part of the Head On Radio Network, just the best there is. You can take that to the bank. Thanks to Billy Shears, our music director, and to Bob, and to Mark, and to John, and thanks to all of you. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.